Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for July 30th, 2012. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kirk Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, the House may consider an extension of the 2008 Farm Bill later this week. We'll have that and other stories. Also, Todd Gleason will be by to explore whether current soybean prices will ration the 2012-13 crop. And the folks from Chesapeake Energy will be by with the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Here are your last trades for this Monday afternoon in Kansas City. September wheat, 919.5, up 13.5. March of 13, 943.75, up 13.25. September wheat at the board at 915, up 17. March, 923.75, up 10.75. September corn, 821.5, up 23. December, 814.5, up 21.25. Go out to July at 791.25, up 18. August soybeans, 1725, up 40.75. September, 1661, up 33.25. November, 1642.5, up 40.75. January of 13, 1631.75, up 40.5. August soybean meal, 546.50, up 18.80. August soybean oil at 52.57, up 53. That's a settlement. August live cattle, 119.67.5, up 7.5. August feeder cattle, 138.40, up 65. August lean hogs at 94.50, down 70. And October at 81.97.5, up 65. And those are your last trades for this Monday afternoon in Chicago and Kansas City.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Leonard's weather highlights, he says hot weather will continue to dominate the U.S. Central and Southern Plains and the Southwestern Corn Belt through the next 10 days to 2 weeks. Temperatures this week will be in the 90s and over 100 degrees from Nebraska to Kansas to Missouri and a part of Southwestern Illinois, while a few 90s occur east into Southern Indiana. Temperatures in the 90s and lower 100s will also impact the Delta early this week. Showers and thunderstorms will impact a part of the U.S. Midwest periodically through the next 10 days, but much of the resulting rainfall will stay a little too light to counter evaporation, leading to net drying conditions and stress. Week 1 rainfall totals in the U.S. Midwest will range from 2/10 to 3/4 of an inch most often, with a few amounts of 1 inch to 1.5 inches. The second week will see similar amounts of rain.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
It was a volatile market. We went up had about a 40 cents gain, and then about midday we were trading about half of that, and then toward the end of the session we regained just about all of it.
Yeah, look, consolidation here. We, you know, had a pretty good up from last week, slows there, and took out some significant resistance levels, was able to stay above some old highs, especially in some corn, and overall, market did fairly well. We're looking at, you know, a little better chance of rain, even though it's too late for many. Then, too, we're looking at month end here. Tomorrow's last day of the month, so maybe a little bit of profit taking here. And so we're kind of maybe set up here for a turnaround Tuesday. And I got to tell you a little story about the turnaround Tuesday, Dave. There's only one place I know that people hear that terminology, and that's here on your station.
We're the only ones, aren't we?
Pretty much so, and for the most part. And I was at the county fair, and I was in the barn there, and of course people, they listen to my voice and think I'm younger and better looking than what I really am, so I was kind of undercover.
It's quite a shock.
And I heard across the barn, turn around Tuesday, so I know people are listening to you, Dave.
Well, that's grand, and we hope they're listening to us this afternoon as we begin to parse early what USDA and NASA's going to say this afternoon about progress.
Well, as they've heard on this program before, probably the key area, now everybody's following suit, is the poor to very poor category. That's probably got the most room to move. There's ideas that that could maybe jump up 4 to 5% as a nation. As far as the good to excellent category, I'm sure it's probably going to drop 2 to 3%. More so here in the east versus the west, but they'll watch the western belt, you know, where the crop's been fairly good. Iowa will be the key here. The eastern part of the state's deteriorated quite a bit, where the western part has deteriorated, but not as much as the eastern part. So we'll watch the state break down and see how that unfolds here. But it's evident the crop's still deteriorating. It's going to be awful hard to even get better if there is rain, because we're at the time of the year here where a lot of this crop just plain starts to shut down see what those numbers are. But ideas are that it's pretty well going to be in line, confirming what we've been looking at all summer long.
Yield reduction is so much that, I mean, it's getting to the point where 117, 123, 125, it really doesn't matter so much on the supply side, because what we really start to need to look at maybe is the demand side and potential demand destruction as we try to figure out where the ending stocks will be.
That's the greatest fear. And I think producers realize that, you know, in the past the attitude was, well, they have to buy. Well, that's not necessarily the case. We've seen attitudes here where there's going to be downtime taken. There's guys that's just going to not pay up for a higher feed. You know, that's already happening. We've already seen that. There's confirmation of that. How much we'll have to see as time goes on in through here. So we're going to ding demand pretty good. The supply-demand balance sheet's not going to show a negative carryout. They're going to take it out of the supply side of the equation. It might not be demand destruction right here in the first couple of months of the new marketing year as we get into September here, but it could slowly gain momentum over the winter into next spring, Dave.
End users probably will have to pony up around the $8 level just to cover needs, but eventually they're going to adjust, you know, their production side, and then we won't need as much corn.
Well, that's the thing. They're going to have to make some adjustments. You know, if you turn back or go back to the old tapes, the thing they were looking at was trying to buy cheaper new crop corn to fulfill old crop demand. And, you know, that's not been a very easy task to obtain here. But if they're going to keep moving here, they're going to have to pay up and pass the cost down the line, which the consumer is going to feel here down the road. or two, try alternative feed sources, or three, try to psych out the market by trying to import grain from outside the U.S.
That number two option, I don't know if that one has any legs. What do you think?
Well, when you're trying to survive, about anything can happen in through here. This is a twice-in-a-lifetime type of market. This is a market that, the bull's been waiting for years, where you've had, a big, huge demand base and run into some production problems, and here we go. So this is one for the history books.
Hedgers, looking at October coming and what prices might be for crop insurance in October, and looking at these prices right now, I suppose could lose a lot of money if the market were to all of a sudden collapse for a month or two.
Well, it's very important to look at your different options going into this fall. You know, how much cash grain you've sold, what your production is, and then, like you mentioned here, what type of crop insurance, if you do have crop insurance, and what type of options you do have with that. We feel, even though there's less bushels out there, we still feel, as a producer, the price risk is to the downside, and that's probably the biggest opportunity to pick up some additional revenue or lock in revenue via move to the downside. Now, as a speculator, from the speculative trade and the trend, as our great leader Pete Manhart says, there is still more roar.
Well, if Pete Manhart says it, well, it must be stamped approved, right?
You bet.
What else are you looking at today?
Well, it's mainly the grains. The grains continue to dominate the trade in through here as a, grain trader, marketer, advisor, and so forth. We continue to stay mainly focused on the grains. But one eye is still on the outside markets. Outside markets are very stable compared to what the grain complex has done here in the last couple weeks. So we continue to keep an eye on outside markets, making sure nothing blows up here outside the grain complex.
And we may have a little midweek hiccup, given the fact that you mentioned it is month end, and then we also have the Fed meeting tomorrow and Wednesday.
Correct. Those factors do play in a little bit longer term, because you have a huge speculative interest in the grain complex, and that speculative interest is controlled by managed money, and some of those money managers, well, most money managers watch outside markets too.
Thank you much, Kurt.
Have a good one, Dave.
That's Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/FarmerView.
In agricultural news, sources say that the U.S. House this week will vote on a one-year extension of the 2008 Farm Bill with disaster aid attached. That likely will anger budget hawks who tie the 2008 Farm Bill to then-Speaker Nancy Pelosi. House Agriculture Committee Ranking Member Colin Peterson assured last week that he would support a short-term extension only if it is used as a way to get to a conference committee. House leaders have been reluctant to bring the House Agriculture Committee bill to the floor despite the panel's bipartisan vote of 35-11. Because they doubt they could get enough Republican votes to pass the measure. Pilgrim's Pride told investors that it's close to striking a deal to import corn from Brazil in an effort to offset the recent rise in costs for feed tied to the widening U.S. drought. The deal could be finalized as soon as this week. Pilgrim's is the world's second-largest chicken producer. Smithfield Foods, Incorporated, the world's largest pork producer, said last week that it will ship in Brazilian corn for use in its hog-raising operations. Pilgrim's uses 4.5 million bushels of corn each week. A new report from Rabobank Food and Agribusiness Research and Advisory Group says that surging feed costs are likely to have induced herd liquidation globally. The report predicts that culling will increase pork supplies temporarily, pressuring prices downward for the remainder of the year. The Chinese government will resume auctions of soybeans from state reserves this week as crushers and edible oil makers face near-record international prices, raising concern about domestic inflation. The Chinese government will offer 400,000 metric tons of soybeans from state reserves it stockpiled in 2009-10 in an auction on Thursday. Soybeans from state reserves are usually offered at prices 10% cheaper than imported soybeans. The National Development and Reform Commission, Beijing's top economic planning agency, asked edible food producers Wilmar International and Kofco Group not to raise cooking oil prices unless absolutely necessary. Wilmar and Kofco control up to 70% of China's retail cooking oil market. The Spanish economy remains stuck in its second recession in 3 years after contracting 0.4% in the second quarter of 2012 from the previous 3 months. Spain has near 25% unemployment and is struggling to avoid having to seek a financial bailout as Greece, Ireland, and Portugal have already done. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. As the growing season progresses and drought conditions persist over large areas of the United States, more attention is being focused on the U.S. soybean crop. Todd Gleason has more on how an agricultural economist at the University of Illinois thinks the price of the oilseed will move.
The importance of the size of the U.S. soybean crop is magnified by the small South American harvest earlier this year, says Illinois ag economist Darrell Good. USDA estimates the coming U.S. crop at 4.2 billion bushels. The supply of soybeans, then, is tight on both sides of the equator, and the pace of U.S. soybean exports, consequently, has been stronger than normal, especially for this time of year. USDA now projects the 2011-12 marketing year exports at 1.34 billion bushels, that's this year, 65 million more than the projection in March. With only 6 weeks left in the marketing year, Darrell Good thinks U.S. soybean exports may marginally exceed the USDA projection. Couple the hot export markets for soybeans with what's been a very strong domestic usage, and it portends high prices for soybeans for some time to come, especially if the drought pushes the U.S. crop size lower this fall. Thanks, Darrell Good.
In the July 11th WASDE report, the USDA judged the U.S. average yield potential at 40.5 bushels and production at 3.05 billion bushels, about equal to last year's crop. Crop conditions have declined sharply during July, but there's still a perception that average yields could be decent if weather turned more favorable from now through August. In the driest areas, however, permanent yield losses may have already occurred. A forecast of U.S. average yield based on trend yields since 1986, percentage of the crop planted late, and the percentage of the crop currently rated in good or excellent condition is near 39.4 bushels.
That's a drop of just a bit more than a bushel to the acre. Darrell Good says the forecast would change by about 0.2 bushels for each one percentage change in the percent of the crop rated in good or excellent condition. Those come out each and every Monday afternoon. A yield of 39.4 bushels, using the NAS forecast of harvested acres, would result in a crop of 2.967 billion bushels. That's small, and would require soybean consumption to be cut by about 105 million bushels in the next marketing year. At the same time, the outstanding export sales for the upcoming marketing year already on the book are 70% larger than sales of a year ago, and already account for a third of USDA's export projection for that year. Now, export demand will ultimately depend on China's appetite for beans and the size of the South American crop next year. The ag economist expects the price of soybeans to peak then sometime between now and November.
Based on our yield expectations, it does not appear that prices are yet high enough to trigger the necessary decline in consumption. However, with considerable production and demand uncertainty, it is difficult to anticipate the timing and magnitude of a price peak. Pricing increments of old and new crop soybeans over the next several weeks still appears to be a prudent strategy.
You can read more on the commodity markets each Monday on the Farm Doc Daily website. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Amy Murray of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Amy.
Good afternoon, Dave.
The question that a lot of producers have is, especially in this part of the country where, we had a bad year last year and we're having a terrible year this year, is there going to be a basis play at harvest time? What do you think?
I guess I personally am anticipating that. On our end, looking at the situation that we're in right now, we're already paying premiums for fall, to get, anything that we can on the books given the short crop. I don't personally foresee that changing. It's just not out there, and that's a local thing, and around here we just aren't seeing the crop. So I would say the basis level should continue to improve.
I think that producers probably will be very hesitant to try to sell anything until they know what they have to sell. What kind of prices do you think it'll take to pry it out of their hands?
I think it all depends on if they have it or not. That's what we're seeing. And when we get to harvest, if we're seeing these low yields, typical mentality, and rightfully so, is that if the crop isn't there, then the price should continue to go higher. Now, whether or not the government has to put a lid on that at some point in whatever way they choose to do so, people may miss out on the opportunity. But as far as I'm concerned, we probably, could see this thing continue to go a bit higher.
And the phone calls that you are answering from the people you work with, what are they asking?
From the people that I work with out in the field, farmers, a lot of questions are around what we're going to do with the crop insurance, how to protect the downside risk, between now and the October average, how canceling a contract works. Everybody's trying to make sure that they understand their risk and understand how to best protect themselves going into this short crop.
Yeah, with the fall harvest option, what are you telling people?
At this point, I guess I think that we could see a downturn here, come October. I just have a hard time wrapping my head around the idea that we could have a $9 or $10 harvest price average, when that's being subsidized and there's going to be a lot of indemnities paid this year. But as from a supply-demand standpoint, I guess I don't see a reason why we couldn't get there. I just personally don't necessarily think that that'll happen for the harvest price for the October average.
Are producers saying there's still hope for their soybeans in this part of the country?
If we get a significant rain, not a tenth, not a couple tenths, if we get a significant rain soon, we're about the 11th hour if we're not already, we could still protect some of what we've got out there. But I think in this area, people are getting pretty close to thinking that it's not going to be 40.
Very quickly, so. Your prices then.
Yes, sir. Today on the board, we are 814 on December, which puts us at 824 cash for fall, and November soybeans at 1643 and a half on the settle here on the board, which would put us here at 1628.
Okay. Thank you much, Amy.
Thank you.
That's Amy Murray of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. It's National Cheesecake Day. It's also St. Abdon's Day, patron of barrel makers. The Romans used barrels as early as the 3rd century A.D., by the mid-20th century, barrels had largely lost their appeal, except for the aging of spirits, including wine and whiskey. On this day in agricultural history in 1739, Caspar Wiskar founded the first successful large-scale glass factory in the U.S. Much of his trade was with the production of wine bottles. In 1838, it supposedly rained frogs in London. In 1849, Jacob Perkins died. Perkins was issued the first U.S. patent for a refrigerating machine. It used sulfuric ether compression. Perkins also produced the first nails, which were both cut and headed by machine in America. He also patented a hot air furnace. In 1898, cornflakes were invented by William Kellogg, 4 years after he and his brother John Harvey accidentally invented a flaked cereal process based on wheat. In 1906, the brothers founded the Battle Creek Toasted Cornflake Company, which is known today as Kellogg's. And that's this day in agricultural history. Listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for our look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist John Davis from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, John.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
I'm afraid I'm going to just have to say another week, same old story, it seems like.
It is the same old story, and as has been the case during much of May and June and July, as we look ahead into August, it's looking like the exact same pattern with very limited rainfall across the central Midwest and temperatures well above normal. So really it's more of the same as we begin to go into August.
So are we at the point where the people that you talk to are saying, We really need to have rain right now for the soybean crop or else it's lights out?
Oh, no question. I think the next couple of weeks are very, very critical. You've kind of reached a point of no return. In the next couple of weeks, if you don't get significant rains here, certainly that's going to have a dramatic impact on overall bean yield potential. And, you know, the beans here have held on. You know, most people say relatively well up to this point, but you've got to get rain up to some point to be able to, number one, you know, fill the pods and get some kind of a bean crop out of it.
And things are terrible down in the Delta, too, yes?
They are. In the Delta, about 5 or 6 weeks ago, they had a little bit of a respite, and they got some pretty good rains in the Delta. But from that point, they, too, have gone very dry and very hot, and they're in the same general pattern that most of the Midwest is in. So their yield prospects are going downhill as well.
But maybe the worst place in the U.S. might be the Central and Southern Plains.
Yeah, well, areas of Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma. Now, again, they were better off early in the summer, but recent heat has turned extremely hot across those regions. We've seen very limited rain, and the prospects here the next couple of weeks for any real change in that is very, very poor.
So hot and dry is the order of the next couple of weeks, which now begins to beg the question, as dry as it's been all summer, what do we need to see to change the pattern? Because we will need moisture the winter if we're going to have any germination next spring.
Sure. Well, certainly the tropics can play an important role at over time, especially in the central U.S. So during August and September, the two biggest months of tropical activity, that's going to be a pretty big player in the pattern. So most tropical moisture that tends to move up into the U.S. tends to be quite heavy, and it tends to be quite significant here over time. So the bottom line right now is that watch the tropics. That's going to be the situation over the next couple of months. And if you're going to get any huge improvement in things, it's going to come out of the tropics.
And before we let you go, a word about the monsoons in India.
India is becoming more of a significant problem, and it continues to look like things will get worse across India over the next couple of weeks. And at the end of the day, it looks like this monsoon season is heading toward one of the worst of the past decade across the subcontinent.
Thank you much, John.
My pleasure, Dave.
That's John Davis of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to subscribe to our free Ag e-newsletter. You can do that at our website at willag.org. Use the link in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.